Good morning and welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. This summer is the season for sequels with Iron Man 2, Sex and the City 2, and another episode of the Twilight Saga, along with new installments of Shrek and Toy Story. This summer is also the season for remakes with The A-Team, Robin Hood, and The Karate Kid. And if you want big stars such as Russell Crowe, Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Cruise, and Julia Roberts, well, summer is the time to go to the movies. But which films will be worth your time and your money? With me in the studio to help you make your movie-going decisions and to help make those decisions a little easier is Columbus Dispatch film critic Nick Chortis. Welcome, Nick.
Hi.
And also the other paper film critic, Hope Madden. Thanks for being here, Hope.
Thanks for having me.
And the official start date of the summer movie season, it used to be Memorial Day weekend, which would be today, but lately it just begins when the first blockbuster hits the screen. So let's start with the movie that kicked off the 2010 summer movie season back on May 7th.
Right. Iron Seems like Man, a long time ago,
I know,
it doesn't, but it really wasn't that long ago.
Iron Man 2. Did Iron Man 2 live up to its own hype? What do you guys think?
I would say no, although in retrospect, I think it's been the most enjoyable, probably best put together blockbuster so far.
I agree, and I don't foresee us having a better action blockbuster kind of a thing coming out this summer.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, you
know, I hope so. It was entertaining enough. I think expectations were raised pretty high by the first one, which to me is right on par with The Dark Knight as probably, you know, the best comic book adaption that we've had in this recent boom of comic book adaptions. So expectations were pretty high, and this one just felt pretty rushed to me.
I think one of the reasons that it didn't do as well is because I think it was casting that really put the first movie over the top. Nobody expected Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. and everything that he could bring to it. By the second movie, well, you do expect that, and so they don't have that sort of, you know, ace up their sleeve for the second film. They just went the traditional route, and I think, like often happens with sequels, especially to comic books, they just put too many villains, they put too many characters.
It's a very busy movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean by rushed. I felt like the screenplay felt like a second or third draft instead of a final draft.
It was fun, though.
It was fun.
Mickey Rourke was very fun.
Mm-hmm. It was fun in stretches.
Yeah, but yeah, it was a little weak.
Well, that normally happens with sequels. You have your weak moments, and then you have your great moments, and you have them trying to continue the story, so maybe there'll be an Iron Man 3.
I imagine.
We'll see him again, for sure. Yeah.
So as of last weekend, Iron Man 2 had grossed more than $250 million, but it fell to number 2 behind the new Shrek movie, which opened last weekend. So let's hear a clip from Shrek Ever After. In this clip, Gingy, the gingerbread man, tries to capture Shrek so that he can collect the bounty on him.
The reward is mine!
Gingy!
Oh, you one-hand-me green devil!
What are you doing?
Collecting my bounty!
Bounty?
What are you talking about, Cracker?
Rumpelstiltskin promised the deal of a lifetime for whoever could bring you in!
Deal of a lifetime?
Where all your wishes come true.
All right, Shrek Forever After, the fourth Shrek. Is this the last Shrek?
Well, they say it's the last Shrek. In fact, they've said it so many times, I'm not even sure what the actual title is. Shrek Forever After was supposedly the official title. And every single advertisement I've seen, it says Shrek, the final chapter.
Yeah, I've been confused by that, too.
Okay.
When this movie came out, I would have bet a large sum of money this would not be the last Shrek. But the fact is, it didn't open that spectacularly, which is kind of funny. It made $71
million. You think only that's, $71
only million. $71 million. But the previous Shrek the Third had made, I think it opened it over 100, so it's a little bit of a disappointment.
And kind of a bland film, really.
I thought it was a lot better than the
funny
third one.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like the third one at all. I mean, it's the franchise certainly has gotten weaker with each episode, but
it has.
It just wasn't funny.
I think it recaptured some of the magic of the original a little bit, and I did like the original quite a bit. And like
I liked Rumpelstiltskin.
Rumpelstiltskin was good.
He's the villain in the fourth one.
He is the
one,
villain.
Right?
Shrek strikes a deal with him. Because basically Shrek is sick and tired of his wife and kids. He's undergoing a midlife crisis. And he strikes a deal where he can go into a world where all that previous stuff in the previous three movies never happened, which is kind of neat because then it becomes an almost a It's a Wonderful Life type deal where Shrek is going through a movie
figuring out what happens
when he never lived.
And Mike Myers is Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah, right. So you can do callbacks to the first two or three movies in the series, but you're not repeating them verbatim.
Right. You know? I didn't actually review this when George Wolf reviewed it, but I agreed with him that it was clever. There were clever elements, and of course, mm-hmm. Donkey is funny as always. It just wasn't funny.
Mm-hmm. I think I liked it a little bit more than Hope. Yeah.
Okay, so that opened last weekend, but do you think that maybe it's going to be topped at the box office? The top spot's going to be taken away from Shrek by Sex and the City 2?
Or Prince of Persia.
That's true.
It won't be number one next week. I wouldn't think so.
No, I doubt it. Although, you know, I don't know how excited people are to see Prince of Persia. And it mm-hmm. strikes me that Sex and the City 2 and Prince of Persia, maybe the audience is too similar. It's not, you know, it's not like, you know, later in the summer where they really, I think, make a conscious decision to just, if they're going to put out two films in the same weekend, they're going to go after completely different audiences. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of overlap. Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't Jake Gyllenhaal appeal to the same people? That's right.
Yeah.
They're both completely culturally insensitive.
Let's start with Sex and the City 2. And we do have a clip from that. Samantha, who's played by Kim Cattrall, invites her gals to the Middle East.
1 week in Abu Dhabi, all expenses paid.
I've always been fascinated by the Middle East. You know, desert moons, Scheherazade, magic carpets.
Like Jasmine and Aladdin?
Yes, sweetie, just like Jasmine, but with cocktails.
It really is exciting. When are you going to go?
I don't know. When can you all be free?
All right, so my first thought when I saw the trailer for Sex and the City 2 was, why Abu Dhabi? And then my second thought was, wow, the critics really hate it. Mm-hmm. And then my third thought that I had this morning was, who cares? I'm still going to go see it, and I'm going to go see it tonight. So it's just, you know, Sex and the City has its niche market of people who love it, and they don't care if it's not the greatest movie in the world. So what did you both think of it? Hope, we'll start with you.
Well, actually, again, I didn't do this one. Chad Dahl did. He and I feel like I owe him a thank you card for that. I did do the first one, and I'm not actually a fan of the series, and I think I got stuck with it because I'm the only chick at the paper. And so I appreciated that he took this one. He hated it. And I got the feeling that he's probably seen the show more often than I have, and I think he made a good point in that there's very little sex and there is no city. You know,
Abu Dhabi is a city, right?
Well,
it's mostly set in Iraq. It's mostly set in a market.
Oh, okay.
In the desert.
The series really.
And inside a luxury hotel. I mean, really don't. It wasn't even filmed in Abu Dhabi.
Right.
It was filmed in Morocco.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think that one of the things that made the TV show as popular as it was it really was. You know, New York was very much a character in the series. Mm-hmm. And now everybody's married and old and they all go on this trip. And you know what I mean? I mean, I feel like aside from the fashion, there's not much that connects this with what it is that people liked about the series.
Well, Samantha's not married, of course.
Of course. Right.
But
and she could get herself in trouble in the Middle East.
Right. Actually, it does take place in Manhattan for the entire first hour of the film. The movie is 2.5 hours long, and there's just no excuse for that. There is no excuse for that.
Well,
it does not take 2.5 hours to tell this
story.
It's
kind of written like the first one, at least, was written in these little 30-minute increments, kind of like you could see each show.
Very episodic.
Yeah.
It's a series of tangents, really.
Mm-hmm.
That line from the clip is interesting. The little girl says, it's Jasmine and Aladdin, and mm-hmm. Carrie says, yes, it is, only with cocktails. And I thought when I heard that line in the movie that was a setup. In other words, this is what the women thought this trip was going to be, or what Carrie thought this trip was going to be. And then when they get there, it was going to be completely different, and then we'd have some story. But as it turns out, that's exactly what it is.
Jasmine and
Aladdin with cocktails. I mean,
it's honest, for
excess sake, and mm-hmm. it's – you know, especially these days, it's harder to take maybe than it once was back in 1998 when things were a heck of a lot better.
Well, yeah. I'm going to have to.
It doesn't matter. You're seeing it anyway. It doesn't matter.
I'm going to see it anyway, along with a lot of other people. And from what I've read, you know, the critics all hate it, but the audience walking out of the movie is just like, fabulous.
Well, maybe. I mean, the screening I saw, and you don't want to extrapolate too much from these preview screenings that we go to, but mm-hmm. I got there insanely early. Because usually there's a line, mm-hmm. you know, around the block for something like this, and there wasn't. I mean, it was not a packed screening. I don't know if people were waiting to see it Wednesday night with their friends or Thursday or Friday night with their friends, maybe. But it was also kind of eerily quiet when the screening was over. And again, that's an anecdote. You can't base too much on that.
Right.
But I got the feeling that
it doesn't
people
have the kind of buzz.
Overly thrilled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. I'd heard a point made that put these two films back to back and they actually – it's a longer running time than some seasons of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
It would be 5 hours, right?
For a half hour part. I mean, it's excessive.
Yeah. It is excessive.
Yeah.
Just like
everything else.
I mean, that fits perfectly
yeah.
with the theme of the thing.
Yeah, well, it's excessive. Lots of shoes, lots
mm-hmm.
of cocktails.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of Sex and the City parties with a lot of cocktails
yep.
all
yep.
weekend long.
It's good for theaters.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know there's one at the Drexel, at least, and there mm-hmm. may be a few other locations that are having parties. A lot had parties Wednesday night,
right.
like
yes.
for the midnight
right.
opening, and
right.
then last night as well.
Pretty elaborate ones, too.
Yeah. It's a good excuse to get dressed up and
sure.
have a cocktail. So, Sex and the City, too. You're listening to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich, and we're discussing the summer movie season, the good, the bad, and the ugly. What movies are you looking forward to this summer? And when we return from this quick break, we will talk about Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. Call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back after a break on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
Lifestyle Family Fitness CEO Jeff Dyer hopes his Columbus gyms will be packed with teenagers.
Having a chance to exercise in an adult environment gives them a whole different perspective about the way fitness can be fun and rewarding at the same time.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Some sunshine this afternoon with isolated showers and thunderstorms, a high around 83. Currently it's 73 degrees and overcast. Tonight, clear overnight with a low around 63, and this weekend is looking pretty nice. Saturday, sunshine with a high of 85. Sunday should be sunny with a high of 88. And Memorial Day should have morning sunshine and then clouds and rain in the afternoon with a high around 82. Now back to All Sides Weekend with Amy Jurevich.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. Joining me in the studio for a discussion of the summer movie season is the Other Paper film critic Hope Madden and Columbus Dispatch film critic Nick Chortis. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org to join the conversation. And I promised, you know, and we'll be done talking about Sex and the City 2. No more of that. I promise. I'm sorry.
That was fine.
Now we'll talk about another movie. Very different. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. Tell us what this is about, because to be honest, I didn't know much about it except Jake Gyllenhaal's in it.
Right. And he apparently spent the last 4 years in a gym.
Yeah.
Because he is huge.
He looks good. He looks
My
different.
Wife really wants to see this
now,
movie. She's excited.
Is he the highlight of the movie?
Well, yeah, Ben Kingsley co-stars, mm-hmm. and he does a fine job as he
actually Alfred Molina
does.
Is the highlight.
Oh,
of the movie.
Oh yeah, I think you're right. He's also always good. Although I wish he would stop taking roles in adequate to.
Yeah, but
films.
The guy needs to eat.
Yeah, he does.
And this is a.
But it's a video.
He plays
game.
An ostrich trainer who trains ostriches to fight. Has nothing to do with the plot, but it's a nice bit of comedic relief because the rest of the movie is kind of a drag. And I hate to be so negative.
Yeah,
so, okay.
Still, but
the movie is based on a video game.
Yes,
right?
I'm sorry. The movie is based on a video game.
Like a series of video games.
Yeah, a specific video game that came out in 2003 by the same title, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. And the hook for that video game was that you could reverse time. You could go back a short way in time. So if you got beat up or killed, you basically hit a button, you could reverse everything 30 seconds and go at it again. So the movie has the same kind of hook. There's a magical dagger that reverses time, and the whole entire movie is to keep this dagger safe, to keep it out of the hands of the enemy. Unfortunately, you wish you had this dagger, but you could get your 2 hours back.
See
how I did that right there?
Very nice. Very nice. Now, this movie is meant to be, you know, it's not meant to have the best storyline or the best, you know, the best dialogue. It's meant to be a spectacle. It's meant to be.
I guess, but I think that's letting, I just think that's letting this stuff off too easy. I mean, I really do. I mean, a lot of time and energy goes into making these movies. Hundreds, thousands of people.
And tons of money
commit their time to it. And if movie tickets these days are, if you're not seeing it in 3D, it's still going to be approaching $10. I think, I don't see
they
that.
They ought to be better.
Think back to last summer when Star Trek, you know, had a fun, intelligent, well-written script.
Right.
Same thing with Up. I mean, there are examples. These things can be done.
Right.
And to just dismiss something as well, it's spectacle for spectacle's sake. Don't take it at all seriously. You know, I don't take it seriously because it's Prince of Persia: Sands of Time based on a video game. But I do think you can walk in and expect some semblance of characterization, you know, a discernible plot that doesn't go off in a billion different directions. I mean, Hope and I were saying before the show started, the script feels – well, we said for Iron Man 2 as well. The script feels like a second or third draft, or even worse, something
that,
was
worked
filmed
on after it
and then
was
they
done.
Went back in afterwards and tried to fix things, because there's a lot of looped, dubbed dialogue in this movie, a surprising amount.
Yeah.
And that's never a good sign.
Did you see it in 3D?
It's not in 3D.
Oh,
no,
it's not in 3D. Oh, okay. I thought you meant that it was in 3D.
No,
okay.
I mean,
they're more expensive.
Thankfully,
the 3D
it's not
films
in 3D.
Are more expensive. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm kind of
the
surprised.
The action scenes are just incomprehensible now. If they were in 3D, they'd probably give you a headache.
They probably would.
Okay, so Prince of Persia: Sands of Time opened today.
Yes.
So, do you think that it's going to top the box office, or is it Sex and the City?
No, I think
too?
Sex and the City is going to.
Okay. 614-292-8513, and we have Mike on the line. Mike, what's your comment?
I have a question. Why do the film industry not cater to the baby boom generation? For example, the Harrison Ford's The Fugitive. Why are they limiting it to the more the younger generation and not the more mature generation?
Do you think that the movies out are more geared toward the younger generation?
Well, I think two things. One, the simple answer to that question is because kids go see movies and they see them opening weekend and repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, I think, spend more money on concessions.
Yeah, I think so too.
And not that the industry cares – the studios care too much about that, because that's more of a theater thing.
Right.
But yeah, kids just go see movies, and especially over the summer when they're out of school and they don't have to go to work. As far as appealing to a younger crowd, I think that's probably true. But when you look at this summer, it is kind of interesting to me is that you do see stuff like The A-Team, which is a callback to – you know, the 1980s television
series. Yeah, The Karate
Kid
also.
The Karate Kid is a remake. Later on this year, we'll get another Tron movie. We'll also get a Wall Street sequel.
Oh,
I mean, the 80s and early 90s haven't – I mean, they're drawing from that area. Now, that's not to say that these films aren't aimed at younger audiences.
And
for sure.
I do think, though, there are some filmmakers who are finding a comfortable niche in catering to an older crowd, starting with Something's Gotta Give, and then It's Complicated,
But there are exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, there
to
are.
The rule.
But I think what those films have – and Mamma Mia even. I think what they've proven is that you can carve out a decent amount of money, but you're not going to make blockbuster money with that kind of thing.
Well, and also you're not going to make it the first weekend.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mamma Mia is something that ended up making a lot of money, but it had a long –
word of mouth.
Yeah.
Right.
A long extended run.
Very few studios or theaters allow films to build like that anymore.
Yeah. You need that opening weekend.
Yeah.
So to get back to Mike's question more directly, do you think maybe the summer movie season is not the time for him and he needs to – whenever the more – Oscar caliber movies are coming out, which is not typically in the summer blockbuster season.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think the movies get more serious in the fall.
Right.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. Yeah. And that's positioning on the studio's part, too.
And you're right. I mean, Nick said it. The summer is for kids because the kids are available. They're available all day long and at night. You know, they don't have to get up the next day. That's really why the blockbusters are aimed at them, because they're just this loose audience to try to capture.
Again, I think that there's a line there. Something like – I keep going back to Star Trek or Up that appeals to, you know, all audiences.
Right.
And treats all audiences with respect.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. Well, I guess maybe wait till fall.
Sorry, Mike.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the call. So we talked about Sex and the City and Prince of Persia. Moving into the weekend after that – started on June 4th. That's when Marmaduke comes out.
Marmaduke.
I know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I just saw a commercial for that for the first time last night, and I don't know.
Yeah. If you haven't seen enough computer-generated dancing animals, then this one is for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're probably 4 years old.
You know, actually, June 4th is an unusual weekend, I think, because there are four films, none of them huge, all coming out. So we don't have, like, any big CGI blockbuster at all. You've got The Killers.
The Killers, which is Katherine Heigl and Ashton Kutcher.
That's the one I'm looking forward to.
Splice, I'm looking forward to that, too. It's kind of a sci-fi
thriller. Sarah Polley, Adrian Brody.
I think probably the big one that week is
Get Him to the Greek, I would imagine.
Which is a spinoff of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where Russell Brand plays the same out-of-control rock star. Also on June 4th, by the way, is Seven Samurai is going to be opening
at
Gateway for a one-week run, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah,
so if you've never seen the Seven Samurai, on a big screen in 35mm. Here's your chance.
Okay.
A little plug for that.
That's something to check out. You're listening to All Sides Weekend. We're discussing the summer movie season. What movies are you looking forward to this summer? What films do you want to ask our critics about? 614-292-8513 or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. And now I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. I'm going to jump to a movie that I know everyone in this room, at least, and a lot of people are looking forward to, Toy Story 3. Mm-hmm. And this movie, you know, the third installment of Toy Story, we've been waiting. Has it been 9 years?
It's been longer. The last Toy Story 2 was released in 1999. So.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have a...
I'm not very good at math, but
11.
I think that's 11 years.
11 years, okay. I was glazing over the math and moving on. In this clip, Woody, Buzz, and the gang get to know the other toys in their new home, a local daycare.
It's a miracle.
And you wanted us to stay at Andy's.
Because we're Andy's toys.
So you got donated by this Andy, huh? Well, it's his law, Sheriff. He can't hurt you no more.
Whoa.
Now let's get you all settled in. Ken? Where is that boy? Ken?
New toys!
Far out. So, who's ready for Ken's dream tour?
All right, that is Toy Story 3, and the whole gang gets dumped in a daycare, basically, when Andy goes to college.
And donated to a daycare, which I think is a great idea.
Oh, yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I know we're looking forward to this. I know you probably haven't seen it yet, right?
No, we haven't seen it yet, but very much looking forward to it. And you said earlier that sequels usually see a fall off, and you're absolutely correct in that. They usually do. Toy Story 2, though, to me, is just as good, if not better, than the original. So that's...
Amazing rarity.
I don't have
rarity,
the qualms that you normally would have with a sequel.
No.
And because it's Pixar.
Right.
And if you look back, I mean, it is jaw-dropping. It's amazing the run that Pixar is on. I think it's 10 or 11 films in a row that have not only done well at the box office, but have done well critically and with audiences.
Yeah.
I mean, Cars being the possible exception
the weakest
to that.
One,
But
So our caller Mike from before might want to go see Toy Story 3.
Yeah, I mean, if you think back, Toy Story started this all off in 1995.
Yeah.
So it has been 15 years of high-quality product that these guys are putting out every year.
They even put it in realistic time, because if Andy was approximately 4 in Toy Story 1, then he is 18 years old and he is going to college.
That's right, he's heading up to college. It's even the same actor doing the voice, which is kind of a neat
touch. That is neat. You know what I think is funny, though, about that is that so many of the people who saw Toy Story in the first place saw it because they had little kids, if you are like me. And my son was 3 when Toy Story came out. It was everything in all the world. He would stop people on the street. Have you seen the show? And so when my husband and I saw the trailer for this, I swear to God, I teared up because, you know, my son, he's going to be a senior in high school this year.
Oh, that's
and,
good.
You know,
yeah, that's
it's,
funny, yeah. Yeah.
And I, you know, I think that this is going to have the same effect on an awful lot of people who saw it the first time because they took their kids to see it and their kids are now adults. I mean, I'm more excited to see it than my son is.
Yeah. And those movies hold up.
They really
because
do.
Because it's unlike most of the DreamWorks stuff, which is Shrek and Kung Fu Panda and Madagascar. Pixar movies, I think, make an attempt to be timeless because they're not based on pop culture references. You go back and watch the original Shrek and there's all these Matrix references.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't hold up.
No.
And a kid watching it today will go, well, what the heck is that? You know,
I agree. Toy Story.
We're heaping a lot of expectations on Toy Story 3. It is a different director this time around. John Lasseter did not direct it. Which I don't know, you know, I don't know that would temper your enthusiasm
Plus
or
he
not.
Plus, he did do Toy Story 2 and Finding Nemo, the director.
He worked on those films,
Yeah.
Lee.
So, Unkrich.
He's from Cleveland, too.
Oh, nice.
And we should learn how to pronounce
it.
We need to do is spell it. So.
Yeah, normally that's all that matters.
If you're going to be coming on this show, you're going to have to figure out how to say
it
because I don't know how to say it. Maybe that should be my job. I'll figure it out.
But yes, looking forward to that one.
Toy Story 3, June 18th, right?
That's right. Yes.
All right. So we have a little wait, but it's coming. We have an email from Gina. The best thing about summer in Columbus is Kappa's summer movie series, which we are extremely lucky to have here.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes on to say, also, stop dogging Sex in the City.
She didn't say that. You're just pretending.
I'm reading this right here. And she says, I rarely go to see current commercial movies, but this will be the only one I see this summer made since 1970.
Wow.
So, in other words,
fine.
She's going to see the movies
fine.
At Kappa Summer Movie Series. There's a few chick clips in there.
No, that's fine. I mean, Sex and the City 2 is essentially an excuse to hang out with these ladies for 2.5
right.
more hours, and there's nothing wrong with that. To me, the act is wearing thin, but again, with the price of a ticket these days, I always hope people enjoy the movie. I don't want them to agree with me when I don't like a film. But yeah, the Kappa Summer movie series. I mean, what can you say? It's terrific. It's $4. $4.
It's a great value, and so often they just pick things that you think, oh, I've never seen that on the big screen.
Right.
You know, it's it's a joy, really.
Yeah.
All right. 614-292-8513 or allsides@wosu.org. We have Mark on the line. Mark, what's your comment?
I wonder if you have seen Ghost Rider, the new Roman Polanski movie.
Yes.
Go ahead, Dan. Because I did not, frankly, do that
think
for us.
Of it?
I enjoyed it. I think a taut political thriller mystery. I mean, they're always if they're written well and performed well, they're always enjoyable, kind of regardless. I thought that the end was a little bit flat, and but I thought on the whole it was very smart and interesting film, and I thought Ewan McGregor did a great job. I thought Pierce Brosnan did a great job.
Kim Cattrall in it?
Yes, Kim Cattrall. When did it come out?
The woman was fantastic too. The Pierce's wife.
I can't think of her name. She was though in a really a pretty thankless role. She was just unpleasant.
She was great.
Yeah, she was.
And they had a cameo by Eli Wallach. Remember that?
Yes, I had completely forgotten about that. Yes, I had totally forgotten about that.
Rolled Eli Wallach out. I mean, he's got to be as old as Linklater.
You know what? One of the things I thought was really interesting about it was how convincingly they created sort of the East Coast. You know, sort of Martha's Vineyard feel when it was not, of course, filmed in the United States, since the director can't come here.
Mm-hmm. Totally explained why Roman Polanski is in jail now.
Okay, Mark. Well, thank you very much for that recommendation, Ghost Rider. Did it come out? When did it come out?
A couple months ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it gone from the theaters, maybe?
It is.
So we'll have to wait for that on DVD. 614-292-8513 or email to allsides@wosu.org. Now let's back up to June 11th weekend, and that is when The A-Team comes out. And so we're going to talk about remakes a little bit. In this clip, we get a profile of the character B.A. from The A-Team.
Subject, Bosco Baracus, a.k.a. B.A.
Sucks to be you, homie.
He is the A-Team's vehicle and munitions expert and should be approached with extreme caution.
I'm B.A. You're going to be unconscious.
I'm sorry. I can't stop looking at your hair.
And that is B.A., the character from the A-Team, who was played by Mr. T.
Right.
Historically speaking, this is not being played by Mr. T, though. It's a colorful team of former Special Forces soldiers who get set up for a crime they didn't commit, so they go rogue and use their talents to try to clear their name.
Which sounds like every movie.
It does. It sounds like it, like three other films this summer.
It does. It does.
But this is the A-Team.
I know.
So
that's
this is different. So is this for people who have never seen one episode of the 70s TV show, or is this for people who love that show?
Well, 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, 80s.
Let's get it. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's important to me because
I
grew up watching the A-Team.
Okay.
That's the only reason.
I think I just automatically said the wrong decade. But
no,
80s,
I think I don't know. You know, I mean, you watch this trailer and it is it's one of my favorite trailers I've seen in a while because it's completely over the top crazy, which shouldn't be too surprising because the director is Joe Carnahan.
Right.
Who directed Smoking
Aces.
If you've seen that movie, you know how insane things can get. I'm sure with this PG-13 rating on this one, I think it's PG-13. I'm sure it's not R.
Yeah. They would cut out too much of their potential audience.
Yeah. So
R,
it won't be quite as bloody or nihilistic,
zany.
But, you know, I think it looks like fun.
I do, too.
You know?
I mean, I think they're going to tap into the nostalgia sort of quotient of people like us who watched it when we were kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at the cast, too, Bradley Cooper, hugely hot, you know, and they I mean, I don't just mean that he's nice looking. I mean that he's a hot commodity.
Well, he is nice looking, right? Let's be honest.
Is he? And
I had noticed.
And Rampage Jackson, I think that was an inspired choice to take over the role of B.A. Baracus. You know, it's not like
MMA
Mr.
fighter.
T. Yeah.
Well, I want to know why Mr. T's not in it.
We were talking about that.
Good question. I think they should have cast Mr. T. I think he could still pull it off. Why not?
Yeah. You know, he did a great job in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. He played the town cop, and he was great. It's animated, so he didn't have to show up physically, but still.
I'm hoping Mr. T is in it somewhere. I'm hoping there's a cameo where he just randomly shows up.
I don't think so.
I hope. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, too, but I don't think so. What's interesting about that weekend is you got the A-Team, and then you also have the Karate Kid remake.
Yeah,
so
let's
you've got
talk
two
about
80s properties going head-to-head.
And it seems to me that, again, they would share a lot of audience. I think the A-Team will hit an older audience than the Karate Kid, but still, I mean, I think, middle school kids are going to be torn between the two, I would think.
The Karate Kid looks askew a lot younger.
Yeah.
A lot younger.
More family.
Will Smith's kid.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Smith.
Jaden Smith.
And taking over the Mr. Miyagi role, although I don't think he's called Mr. Miyagi in the movie, is Jackie Chan.
Right.
So, instead of
Mr. Miyagi being in America, the Karate Kid goes to China.
Right.
I think that's right. And so it's more like the Karate Kid Part 2.
Except, of course, they went to Japan.
That's right. Okay.
In this one, it's in China, and he's being abused by – well, he's being bullied just as poor Ralph Macchio was.
Daniel LaRusso was.
Right.
You hope he does the crane at the end.
He does the crane.
He does?
He does the crane.
Oh.
I don't know if it's the capper or not. And I would
maybe
love
I'll
to
be there then.
I would love to see Mr. Billy Zabka have a cameo in this one. I don't think he does.
I don't think so either.
But again.
Well, to me, just by watching the trailers, the Karate Kid seems more serious and the A-Team seems more fun, and they know that they're a silly remake.
Yeah.
And
oh, sure.
The Karate Kid seems like, no, this is serious.
Well,
and
serious
Jaden
enough.
Smith is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, telling a real story, the A-Team looks like it's, obviously intentionally completely over the top. I mean, there's a guy parachuting in a tank firing a Gatling gun or something.
Right.
So.
Well, I also think the Karate Kid is going for an audience of people who did not see the original. I don't think they're going as much for nostalgia as the A-Team. And so they are taking themselves more seriously. And
this may
to
sound
a,
like heresy for somebody who grew up on both of those,
right.
these properties, but these are not
overly
treasured properties.
No, not at all.
The A-Team
Absolutely
really
not.
Is not a very good TV show.
No.
And I love the Karate Kid, the original, but
it was
taking
very
it in
enjoyable,
a different direction.
Yeah.
And it doesn't offend me that they're remaking these two properties. How about that?
Well, it's been such a long time since I've seen The Karate Kid that I don't know whether I would go into it and think, compare it to the old one. I might want to watch the old one after seeing it. I'm not sure. But the A-Team, I wish Mr. T was in it. I'm going to go back to that.
I'm a huge
Mr. T fan. Had a T-shirt and everything when I was young. I will admit that.
You even had a mohawk. I've seen that on Facebook.
Hey now. Let's keep the mohawk a secret. You're listening to All Sides Weekend, and you can join our summer movie season discussion by calling 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What movie are you looking forward to this summer? Is there anything you'd like to ask our critics about? And after this short break, we're going to be talking about a movie that everyone in this room, I think, wants to see, Inception, starring Leonardo DiCaprio. So 614-292-8513 or allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides Weekend on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. It's currently 73 degrees and partly cloudy. Today, we should expect some sunshine this afternoon with isolated showers and thunderstorms with a high around 83. Clear overnight with a low around 63, and tomorrow we should be enjoying some nice summer weather, high around 85. And Sunday, continuing that nice weather with a high of 88 and sunny. The Monday should also be nice for Memorial Day in the morning, but a little bit of rain in the afternoon with the possibility of showers, actually, and thunderstorms. So enjoy your Memorial Day weekend and perhaps check out a movie.
On the next Fresh Air, to kick off the holiday weekend, we have a funny interview with the creators of South Park, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Their show has continued to be controversial.
There has been a lot of times where we've opened up the paper, pulled up the Drudge Report or something, and it's like, South Park does this, and you go, oh, God, what do we do? And you find out from the paper. Yeah.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is coming up today at noon here on WOSU. And be sure to watch Columbus on the Record on WOSU TV tonight. Each week, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson talks with political analysts and news reporters about the top stories of the week. Watch Columbus on the Record Friday nights at 8:30 on WOSU TV.
And this is All Sides Weekend on WOSU 820 and PR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. With me for our summer movie season discussion is Nick Chortis with the Columbus Dispatch and the other papers Hope Madden. 614-292-8513 or allsides at WOSU.org if you'd like to join our conversation. And opening on July 16th is Inception, and it looks like a thriller. This is a portion of the trailer for Inception. It's directed by Christopher Nolan and starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
There's one thing you should know about me. I specialize in a very specific type of security. Subconscious security.
You're talking about dreams.
We create the world of the dream. We bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their secrets.
Then you break in and steal it.
Well, it's not strictly speaking legal.
Okay, so it looks, from the trailer, it looks crazy, really cool, yeah. And I have no idea what it's about.
Right.
No idea.
Which is just incredibly rare and wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, wonderful. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that you could go into a movie and not know 60%, 70%
right.
of what's going to happen
right.
in it. And that just doesn't seem to be the case anymore. Even if you just catch advertisements on television, they'll give you a rough sketch of almost the entire film. But this one they're intentionally keeping quiet, and I hope that it continues all the way to mid-July, that
do
we
too.
Don't find out more about this.
No, I hope that, you know, film critics, you know, like us, keep, the plot summary to a minimum if
right.
we get a chance to see it before everybody else does.
Right.
And because it would be, you know, I think that you can rely on Christopher Nolan that it's a great film. So it would be worthwhile to just let people go in completely and just be surprised by it.
Yeah. I mean, certainly Nolan's made, yeah. I mean, just to give people some context, Batman Begins, The Dark Knight are the two biggest hits. But he also made a little movie called Memento.
Right. Oh, my.
Started at the end and went backwards, and Insomnia, and even
yeah.
Prestige,
yeah.
which I liked, I liked quite a bit. So Nolan has a great track record, and I'm a big Leonardo DiCaprio fan, and all we know is that he goes into people's dreams and steals their idea. Ellen Page is in the movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
So it has a nice cast of
I wasn't sure
young
if he
actors.
Was stealing ideas from dreams or if he was changing time through the dreams.
I think he's – well, who knows?
Yeah, it's hard to say. But, yeah,
I think he's
got
stealing
the impression
dreams, yeah.
that, yeah, he steals.
But the visuals look
amazing.
Look pretty fantastic,
yeah.
too. So, yeah, I mean, you know, in a summer – and I feel like we've been negative, but this is not a – this is a weak summer.
It looks to be.
Yeah. I mean, so far it certainly is. And
yeah.
But – this is the one you kind of hold out hope. And for our caller earlier who said he's looking for a little bit more adult-oriented fare,
yeah.
you know, I would think this would be it. It's a sci-fi, fingers crossed, thinking
All right, so
person's thriller.
That's Inception on July 16th it opens, so we can look forward to that for more than a month. backing up a little bit to July 2nd, The Last Airbender comes out. Can we talk about this a little bit? Because I didn't know much about it. I just from reading about it, the elements, air, water, earth, and fire are four nations, and the Fire Nation launches a war against the others.
It's a
if you say so.
Yeah,
that's, no, it's based on
an anime series.
Yeah, anime series,
yeah,
right.
So an animated series.
And
was,
a very popular one yes. called Avatar,
The Last Airbender.
Now, obviously, they had to drop the Avatar for obvious reasons
right.
so people didn't get confused.
Right.
So now it's just The Last Airbender. What's interesting about this to me is that it's directed by M. Night.
I agree. And
who
I think
needs a hit.
He desperately
yeah.
needs a hit, you know. And it's the first time that he's done anything that he is not the sole creator of. So he's, you know, he's adapted the screenplay based on this series. So which, you know, he does a fine job writing, but I think actually having to work with somebody else's material might help him mm-hmm. eliminate some of the quirks of his writing that have become now just hooks people expect, like the surprise ending and the, you know. Yeah.
Just remind people, M. Night, are we calling him M. Night instead of M. Night Shyamalan now? Is
he no, I just, oh, sorry. I'm on a first name
so
basis
close.
With him.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
First name
basis. Yeah, no, M. Night.
First
Night Shyamalan, sorry.
First initial
right.
name basis.
Right,
okay.
Right.
So tell us other movies that he's done just to orient people.
Well, The Sixth Sense
yeah,
is obviously his most famous one.
Unbreakable, which was Unbreakable. A huge I really loved that film.
I'm a big fan of Unbreakable,
And then
too.
Signs. And so his first three – well, his first three major films were really quite excellent. And then he's taken a nosedive.
And huge hits. Yeah. The Village.
The Village was disappointing.
Okay. But it did okay at the box office. And then Lady in the Water,
which was
tanked.
Yeah.
And then The Happening, which
was,
tanked.
Yeah.
So okay. he needs a hit. And this is looks to be more of a straightforward – action
right.
movie
yeah.
for
and you know
for
I think
young adults.
For the first time something that will appeal to a younger audience
right yeah and,
aimed at a younger audience
right
the
now,
hero in it is a kid right
yeah
yes
okay.
yes
all right so that is The Last Airbender July 2nd it opens and I glazed over it but we're gonna have to go back we have to talk about Twilight
which opens the same weekend which I find odd because again I think that they're hitting on the same audience
Twilight opens the Wednesday,
yeah,
though, so it gets a little bit of time by
itself.
It opens
June 30th, and then, okay.
Yeah, and then Airbender comes out on Friday.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't like the Twilight bash because I don't see the point in it.
I am a lifelong huge fan of horror films, of vampires that actually kill people, mm-hmm. Werewolves that, in fact, kill people, you know.
But they've evolved.
Actors who
evolved.
Can act, you know.
That's not entirely fair.
But wait. These vampires and these wolves are out for romance.
They're lovers. They're not fighters.
That's right.
And they're covered in glitter.
Yes, right.
That's right.
Okay.
I mean, it's like beating your head against
it. We're making fun of it.
Beating your head against a brick wall.
It's true.
Even more so than with something like Sex and the City, too,
yep.
because it's incredibly popular and
it
people
is.
Are going to go see it regardless.
Yep.
I did think that the second film was a pretty major improvement over the first one, which I thought was just looked cheap.
Yeah.
Like kind of a bargain.
I could not get
version.
Over the shirtless guy. I couldn't get past it in the second film.
Yeah.
Was mostly, to be honest, because he's underage. And
yeah.
I didn't want to look at a minor
it
without
is a
shirt
little,
on
it is
for the whole film.
Kind of disturbing. The guy was like 16 or 17, Taylor
yeah.
Lautner. Yeah, he has another guy who he was probably working out with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, exactly.
Spent a couple years in the gym. And he took his shirt off at every possible opportunity,
oh, yeah.
sometimes without even a logical reason. He would
yeah.
just take his shirt off. And when he did, the entire audience would go crazy.
Yeah,
I thought, this kid's 16.
One of the things I liked about the second film, when I saw the first film, it was with an audience of basically 12 and 13-year-old girls. I found it very uncomfortable. I found their response to the film very uncomfortable. I watched the second film with basically an audience of middle-aged women, and I thought they were hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And they laughed when he took his shirt off. I mean, and they didn't take it as seriously. They weren't as hormonally involved in it, but the films appeal to those two distinct money spending classes of people, which I think is very interesting.
And
yeah.
I think that there'll be lines out, you know, waiting for hours to see Twilight. Whereas when we were talking about Sex and the City 2 before, I don't think people are going to go see it. It's mm-hmm. going to make a lot of money, but no one's going to wait in line to see it.
Well, Twilight will make, yeah, we'll easily be.
Oh,
money
yeah.
winner. I mean, maybe
well,
not
you know,
the whole summer, but
as I think pop
it'll
music
be close.
Knows, nobody spends more money than 13-year-old girls. And, you know, nobody gets more excited about anything than 13-year-old girls. And so, yeah, they've hit upon, you know.
At the same time, I mean, I agree with you, but I have friends, female friends and male friends who are my age that adore this stuff
mm-hmm.
and will be there.
Oh, sure.
You know, opening night. So, and parents and grandmothers. So,
And
I'm not sure it's as narrow an audience as we think.
Two films.
The fourth book will, yeah, because you can make more money that way.
Yeah.
And the fourth book's
just like
longer.
Harry Potter.
I'll tell you what. I think you hang in, if you're not like a Twihard, I think you hang in with Twilight because the fourth film is supposedly going to be directed by Bill Condon. Have you heard this?
I have heard
That's
that.
That's crazy.
That's
Bill Condon is
crazy.
Is an excellent filmmaker that – Again, I don't want to bash Twilight, but you wouldn't expect
you,
him
no,
to be.
No, you would not. Well, I know they floated it to Sofia Coppola.
Right.
I mean, they have to give them credit. When they sat down to plot out the fourth film, they tried to snag
yeah.
an Oscar-caliber director.
And he is an Oscar-caliber director.
Yeah.
Gods and Monsters.
Right, yeah.
Dreamgirls.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy who directed Dreamgirls is going to be directing the fourth Twilight, unless that's changed. But
yeah,
I don't think it has. So that's interesting. I mean, that's something to hang in for because it could get a lot more interesting. As far as the third film goes, it looks to me like it's the exact same thing as the
second film.
But
even the synopsis for it is, you know, she has to decide to stay with the vampire she loves or the werewolf who loves her. Isn't
here's
that exactly what
decide.
The plot was for
I
the
read
second
the
one?
First two books. Before I went and saw the first two movies. Now, should I read the third book before I go see the third movie?
I'm thinking
this time maybe I just go in cold without reading the book. I don't know.
I did not make it through the entire first book.
Okay.
I thought I would. I thought, oh, this will be, you know, a fine piece of, you know, adolescent literature. It's like 500 pages long. That's
a lot of
bad text for me. So I just winged it, see if I could understand the film without benefit of the text.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then to use the lingo that you said before, is it, it's Twihards? Is that?
Twihards like diehards.
Okay.
I think.
I got it.
Isn't it?
Is that? Okay. I like it. I want to be up on the lingo, unless
right.
Nick just made that up. And then I'm not.
He's coining the phrase.
I'm copywriting
I'm not
it.
Say
Every
that.
Time you say Twihard, you owe me 25 cents.
Okay. So anyway, the Twilight Saga Eclipse opens on June 30th. And then let's move ahead in the season a little bit. Let's just jump to August to talk about something a little bit different. This is a movie starring Julia Roberts, Eat, Pray, Love. It's based on a book by the same name. And in this scene, Julia Roberts, who plays the character Liz Gilbert, says she needs a change.
Since I was 15, I've either been with a guy or breaking up with a guy. I have not given myself 2 weeks of a breather just to deal with myself.
You want to go away for a year? I used to have this appetite for my life, and it is just gone. I want to go someplace where I can marvel at something.
All right, so that's Eat, Pray, Love. It doesn't open until August, August 13th, so we have ways to wait. But I know there's a lot of people talking about this movie
mm-hmm.
because it stars Julia Roberts,
right.
because it was such a popular book.
Right.
Are we looking forward to this?
I think so. It's based on an extremely popular memoir by Elizabeth Gilbert, which I have sitting on my nightstand at home, which I'm going to read before the movie comes out. But to me, it's just to see Julia Roberts back in a movie again. I mean, you know, she was in Valentine's Day, but you wouldn't consider that. Yeah.
No.
Because she
was
in
that, like,
very
3 hours
shortly.
Worth of work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she wasn't in.
A lot of people are in Valentine's
yeah.
Day.
Yeah. She wasn't in for long, but the last time you really saw her, I think, in a big role was Duplicity.
Right.
Which was a terrific movie.
And she was
different
very fun in it.
Different kind of movie than
Eat,
Pray, Love.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very different.
But, Julia Roberts is one of those actresses for me that I don't think I appreciated as much as I should have until she kind of went away.
And then you missed her.
And then it was like, oh, you know, she was really good, and I'd like to see her come back. So it also has Javier Bardem, who
could not be better.
Yeah.
He's, rarefied air. He's one of the best working actors. So that's exciting.
And interestingly, it is directed and I think co-written by the guy who created Glee, Ryan Murphy.
Oh, that's fun.
I believe
fun.
Is his name. So
okay.
I don't think they'll break out into song in Eat, Pray, Love. I hope they do, but I don't think they will.
We could get all Bollywood on us.
But
that
that's just an interesting kind of, yeah.
Well, she does travel to
note.
India, so maybe there will be at least one song. Maybe the market will break out in a song or something.
Sure.
Okay, so Eat, Pray, Love, August 13th. And since we're running out of time, I wanted to sneak in really quickly for people who want to go see a movie this weekend and maybe don't want to see Prince of Persia or Sex and the City 2, you both reviewed The Art of the Steal, which is a documentary showing at the Drexel. And we do have a segment of the trailer in which we learn that many think that this is an enormous conspiracy.
No one knows this story. This is the scandal of the art world.
Barnes was way ahead of his time.
He collected some of the greatest art in the history of the world.
They've got more Cezannes than are in the entire city of Paris. There's 181 Renoirs, 59 by Matisse, Picasso, 46.
It is the greatest act of cultural vandalism since World War II.
Now, this is a story I did not know about, but it seems really interesting. Hope, I know you liked it a lot.
I did. I thought it was fascinating. I didn't know anything about it. I knew nothing, which I think was one of the fascinating things about the film is that it's the Barnes Institute, and this man just collected art for years and years and years, and he did not open it to the public. He kept it as a school and in a suburb of Philadelphia, basically. And then he died, and little by little, people started to pick apart at his will so that they could do things like travel with it. And then eventually they sort of try to the city of Philadelphia tries to just take it for themselves. And I thought it was mostly fascinating because it's an excellent just microcosm of how the world works. Once something is worth enough money, you cannot keep it to yourself.
Who has the better lawyer?
And I thought it was really well put together. I thought the players in it were sort of weirdly fascinating. And I thought it was a very enjoyable film. But also, just to spend what little time they let you spend in the Barnes Institute, you can kind of see the other point of view. It's like, I want to see this art. Why can't I go see this art?
I think that ultimately, I mean, I liked it. I didn't like it as much as you did. To me, it was at times overwrought. I mean, to call it the greatest act of cultural vandalism since World War II, I think, is at least debatable. But they don't debate it. I mean, that's just and that's okay because that's not what the movie wants to do. The movie is very clearly showing its hand at saying, we believe this to be a travesty, and we're going to tell you why. And like Hope says, they do a nice job of setting it all up and interviewing tons and tons of people and following the money, mm-hmm. you know. And it unfolds kind of as a conspiracy thriller of sorts in documentary form. But like Hope says, you can, you know, I kind of would have liked more for them to address maybe some more of the questions. I mean, what's happening to the collection is basically it's being moved 5 miles to a new facility where more people are going to be able to see it. Barnes collection was open to the public, but it's a very small building.
Out of the way. Right.
And well, I know that what it comes down way, to but... is whether, you know, once a man is dead, are you allowed to simply absolutely reject his own will, what he wants to happen with his property if the property is worth enough money?
Right. And I don't want to. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that is what it's. And I think you make a real good point about it being a microcosm. Whoever has the money and the power is going to be able to bend a supposedly unbendable contract, unbendable will.
Right.
But one of the things. Own will.
I mean, had it not been, you know, had the Barnes Institute itself not been so fascinating and completely unknown to me, I think that's the case with most people. Most people are not really aware of it because,
there's
of course,
a lot
you can't
of interesting
go there.
History in the movie. He was basically a very rich man.
Everywhere. I mean, an unbelievable, amazing number of originals that he has in that building. It was amazing.
And the arrangement of the art was art in itself. Mm-hmm. And that is a sad thing that it's going to be moved and it won't – you can no longer see it. Well, I guess once this place opens in 2011 or 2012, you won't be able to see it the way he wanted it to be seen.
Right.
And that is sad.
That's called The Art of the Steal, and it's showing at the Drexel. And we have just about a minute left, so that is 1 minute, 30 seconds for each of you to talk about one other movie opening this summer that you're excited about. Pick one. Who's first?
I'm hoping that Despicable Me is going to be a fun, you know, film. I think it's got some great voices. The trailers that I've seen for it have been very funny. So, I'm looking forward to that one.
When's that opening?
We have to check our cheat sheet here.
Yeah.
Despicable Me.
July 9th. It was July 9th, the same weekend as Predators, which I should not be looking forward to, but I am.
I got him too. speaking of going back to 80s properties.
Yeah.
One movie I'll mention real quick, we kind of name checked it before but didn't get into it too much, is Splice, which opens June 4th. So coming up real soon here.
Another Adrian Brody. He's in both of those.
He's in both Predators and Splice.
Right.
And basically the plot is these two geneticists throw ethics to the wind and create a animal-human hybrid, and things do not turn out well.
And, you know, that sounds choppy, but it's a good cast and good effects.
Sarah Polley. You gotta love Sarah Polley.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the time we have. I'm Amy Jurovich, and this has been All Sides Weekend. Thanks to Hope Madden from The Other Paper and Nick Shortis from the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for being here. And also thank you to Emma Fett at the controls. Ann Fisher will be here on Monday. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.